From KLCC Studios, this is Oregon on the Record.
I'm Michael Dunn. They say that skiing is all about riding the edge of your skis and the edge of your abilities. But for ski resorts in Oregon, they've also been living on the edge with regard to legal liability. For more than a decade, Oregon law has made it relatively easy for customers to sue entities like ski resorts and other recreational facilities for injuries, opening the door to catastrophic settlements. Today on the show, you'll hear from a reporter at the Oregonian about a major change to this law, which could drastically reduce the legal exposure of the state's outdoor recreation providers. Then, in the second part of the show, you'll hear from our own Brianna Bowman about an important program on the coast helping educate rural and indigenous students about STEM fields. That's next on Oregon on the Record. For the state's ski resorts, lack of snow isn't the only challenge they face. Oregon law has made it relatively easy to sue recreation entities like ski areas, but a law that just passed the state legislature will change that situation and hand a lifeline to this industry. We talk now to an Oregonian reporter who has the scoop. Imee Green, who is a reporter with the Oregonian. Thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, sure. Happy to be here.
Yeah. I want to talk about the story you've been covering. Your article that you wrote recently, Oregon is about to make it much harder to sue your gym and ski resort. Tell us about what this bill that passed, what it's going to do for this important segment of our economy, the outdoor recreation and just overall recreation industry here in Oregon.
Well, it is going to make it a lot more difficult for lawsuits to succeed in Oregon courts. The idea was brought about because about 11 years ago in 2014, there was an injured snowboarder at Mount Bachelor, a teenager who became paralyzed from the waist down from a snow park crash. And he sued Mount Bachelor. And the Supreme Court ruled that liability waivers, including the one that his parents signed, are unconscionable, at least in this case, and what turned out to be many, many circumstances. Virtually, the lawyers tell me all circumstances. Whenever a skier or someone who climbs at a rock gym or hires a whitewater river rafting guide or even participates in a park and rec program like summer camp or tennis lessons, when they sign these liability waivers, they're no longer valid. They don't hold teeth in court. And so what this bill that passed the legislature does is says, well, actually, in many circumstances now, these liability waivers that participants sign are going to hold water, meaning that for, I don't know how to describe it, maybe lower level lawsuits, like lawsuits that claim ordinary negligence against a recreational provider, ordinary negligence being, hey, this ski resort or this river guide, they were careless or inattentive in some way that I got injured. What this bill does is it says whenever a participant has signed a liability waiver, if they're claiming ordinary negligence, that my injuries were caused because of inattentiveness or carelessness at a low level, then I agree, I shouldn't be able to sue.
Okay. So I don't know, let's just kind of game this out. So if a ski resort has shoddy equipment on their ski lift that they don't maintain or they don't notice and something, a tragic accident happens. Now, that would be a situation where that's unusual negligence. And so this, you sign a waiver and you say, I won't hold them harmless, but because of this unusual negligence, game on, I can sue.
Yes. You bring up a great point. There are many carve outs in this bill. So maybe a ski resort was careless. They rented you a pair of skis that were improperly maintained. You're skiing down the slope and your skis malfunction. Let's say you crash and your boot doesn't pop out and it's because of the carelessness of the ski resort maintaining those skis, and you break your leg. Yes, you can still sue under this bill. Your liability waiver, even though you signed it, will probably be thrown out. This is the idea of the bill will probably be thrown out by a judge, and your lawsuit will proceed. So there are carve-outs like improperly maintained equipment. Another huge one is there's a carve-out for if a vehicle hits you. So a snowcat, a snowmobile, a bus in the parking lot. There was a lot of argument in the legislature about whether those lawsuits could still go forward. And this bill says yes.
I see. I would imagine the industry is pretty happy about this because and we've done stories about the fact that liability insurance is getting incredibly expensive for ski resorts and to the point where some of them were really thinking it could be an existential crisis. I imagine they're quite pleased right now with this.
Yeah, they are. If you would have asked them a week ago, 2 weeks ago, how they were feeling, they would say, we're very, very angry. We're very worried about Oregon recreation, whether we're going to have to raise prices on the people who patronize our resorts or rock climbing gyms or join just a general gym to work out. We're probably going to have to raise rates. We're worried more insurance companies are going to pull out of Oregon. We're not going to be able to afford insurance from the remaining insurance companies. The recreational providers were very worried and upset, but last minute amendments to the bill that did ultimately pass have made them very happy. Doesn't give them everything they want, but really, I think we'll have to see how it goes. I think everyone says, all the recreational providers that I've heard from say that, yes, this is gonna make things better and we're relieved, but we really have to see how it plays out. We don't know for sure. Case by case in court, we're gonna see what lawsuits succeed and which ones get thrown out.
Yeah. Let me quickly reintroduce you to the audience, talking with Aimee Green. She is a reporter with The Oregonian. This seemed to pass overwhelmingly, but there was some opposition. I think Representative Nathan Sosa, the Democrat from Hillsborough, they said they didn't like this. Could you tell us what the opposition to the bill said?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because what Representative Sosa from Hillsborough, a Democrat, said was it was so interesting to me. He was one of two legislators out of 86 who voted on this bill, who voted no. So two voted no, and he is a plaintiff's lawyer. He represents injured people. And he said, hey, this bill says that it's okay for Oregonians to sign away their constitutional rights to sue. I mean, everybody should be able to seek redress for wrongs that they've suffered in court. And this is like, if we're allowing people to sign away their right to sue in certain circumstances, is it okay to say, okay, if you go whitewater river rafting, it's okay to sign away your right to freedom of religion? Or if you want to work out at your neighborhood gym, it's okay to sign away your right to vote? I thought what was a powerful speech on the House floor. He said, you know, years in the future, there are going to be Oregonians who are injured, who are paralyzed, who lose limbs, who are brain damaged, who they go to file a lawsuit against the recreational provider that they had hired or that they had paid money to. And they're going to find out that they can't sue, that in small print somewhere, something that they didn't fully read or understand, they signed away their right to sue. And they're going to say, how is this even possible? And the answer is that back in 2026, legislators said it was okay that you could do that. Huh. And I'll just say one other thing, that the response to that was from Representative Kim Wallen. She's a Republican from Medford. And she said, hey, we can sign away certain constitutional rights if we understand what we're doing. And she used the example of, this isn't even signing away, but the police show up at your front door and they say, hey, we'd like to take a look around your house, and the police don't have a warrant. You're welcome to say, yeah, come on in, police. You can, I have a constitutional right that you have to get a warrant, but I'm saying you can come in. And she said it's the same thing with signing away your rights to sue for ordinary negligence. That this is her quote: if you want to strap two skinny fiberglass skis to your feet and hurdle yourself down a mountain, I'm sorry, she said, no one says you have to strap skinny fiberglass sticks to your feet and hurdle yourself down a mountain. This is an option. This is your choice. And she says, yeah. So if you want to sign a liability waiver so you can go skiing and you understand what you're doing, then Oregon should allow it.
I wonder too, we're all very used to waiver type documents. We're almost inundated with them. With, you know, getting an iPhone or a smartphone or new software updates, of which, you know, it's incredibly lengthy, and then we click something, and I imagine the vast majority of us don't thoroughly read those types of things. I am wondering just about the nature of waivers in general. Does it create a bit of a larger bucket of saying certain transgressions might happen that you can sue for? Does it help? I don't know. Does it help or hinder the public's understanding of what they might be liable for and what the for example, ski resort might be liable for?
Yeah, well, I can only base this off of personal experience and experience of others around me. Mm-hmm. Just, I think what you're alluding to is there are many waivers or fine print or contracts that we all are asked to sign as we go about our everyday lives, as we hire contractors or whatever we do, and who really reads all the fine print?
Yeah.
And then understands it.
Yeah.
I have spent a lot of time reading this bill, looking at liability waivers, trying to understand what a certain clause means or phrase means, and it's very difficult. I've even had to ask some of the bill's drafters or the drafters of the amendments, so what does it mean on line 17 on page 2 when it says XYZ? And it's even difficult for them to explain. I think they say in the end, this is what it means. And we'll have to see how it plays out. This is what we think it means, and we'll have to see it play out in court. And we may come back and we may make tweaks. Like if we find that there are horrible injustices going on with lawsuits, that people aren't able to seek compensation when there are really egregious cases of carelessness or recklessness on the part of recreational providers, we may have to come back. Or maybe it's just like people didn't understand what they were signing away. I don't know. Maybe the legislature will come back and make some tweaks.
Yeah. I am wondering, in two points of time, between that Supreme Court case that you referenced and this bill's passage, when you were doing research for this article, did people who were in support of passage of this legislation, did they point to maybe a case that somebody was able to sue because of the Supreme Court case that really, really financially hurt a ski resort or some type of organization that maybe now, you know, that wouldn't have been allowed based on this piece of legislation getting through?
It is so interesting to look at the cases. What would go through in the old times and what will go through in the future because of this bill? The one that is often talked about, other than the Mount Bachelor case, where the teenager became paralyzed from the waist down, mm-hmm. was another case several years later at Ski Bowl, where there was a 30-something-year-old mountain biker. He really was an expert mountain biker. It's summertime. He's rides the lift up and is mountain biking down a trail at Ski Bowl. And there is a signpost in the trail, like what he would describe as kind of the main part, the middle of the trail. He hits it and he ends up paralyzed from the waist down as well. He signed a liability waiver, but it got thrown out before trial. The judge threw out the liability waiver, said your lawsuit can proceed. He went to jury and he won a little bit over $11 million, got settled for about $10.5 million after that, which often happens. There's negotiations. Ski Bowl says we promise not to sue. I mean, we promise not to appeal the verdict if we can give you a little less. So yeah, he got $10.5 million. And a lot of people say he got that $10.5 million because he sued for ordinary negligence. And maybe with this bill going forward, people wouldn't be able to sue under that circumstance. And what he'd have to do is he would have to prove a higher level of negligence called gross negligence in order to win.
Aimee, always appreciate having you on. Aimee Green, reporter with The Oregonian. Thanks so much for coming on and talking to our audience.
Yeah, thanks, Michael.
Now, our reporter fills us in on a rural education program on the coast. Brianna Bowman, our weekend edition host. Brianna, thanks so much for coming on and talking with us.
Yeah, happy to be here.
You also do stories from time to time for us and was really intrigued by the story you put together about students at Siletz Valley School District. Talk about this story. Talk about this really kind of unique program.
Yeah, so I first was invited to come check out this family math and science event at the Siletz Valley School. That's one of the, or is the only school in Siletz. And I knew that this was part of a program that OSU runs, a pre-college program called SMILE, which stands for Science and Math Investigative Learning Experiences. So there are students in or schools in rural areas of Oregon that participate in these SMILE clubs. And the students at this school, they had, and this was primarily, I think, the fourth and fifth grade classes that were showcasing what they learned this year. And there was a lot of stuff about whales. There were some students that learned about ocean mysteries. So I think they just kind of investigated whatever thing kind of piqued their interest. But then also what was showcased at this event was another program that's also supported by OSU called the Explore and More program. And that is a program unique to Siletz Valley School and Chamawa Indian School. Hmm. And this program guides students, high school students, in STEM experiences, learning about STEM subjects and research topics, but also blending and enriching that experience with Indigenous arts and culture as well. And so the students at this event were showcasing their projects that they had worked on that year. That was kind of the culmination of their Explore and More program for the year. So they had posters explaining the projects that they worked on over the course of that year. And, it was just really interesting and the students were so passionate about it. And I had so much fun talking to them about their projects.
Yeah. What I found fascinating too is obviously, you know, with budgets the way that they are and our education system, you know, having a lot of challenges, it really was neat that a very rural school district, I think, you know, less than 300 kids in the entire district, were getting this kind of attention, this kind of resources from OSU.
Yeah, and I'd say that, like, OSU is one of the, is a sort of, like, logistical partner mm-hmm. in this project, but this project is, or this program, Explore and More, is primarily organized and run by three women, Teresa Smith, Corey Simock, and A.J. Malazzi. Mm-hmm. And they are incredibly passionate about this program. And they are the program coordinators. They are they're teachers and interacting with the students. And but they also have OSU mentors. So there's students at OSU that are mentors for the high school students at Siletz and at Chamawa. So it's this very collaborative program between OSU and Chamawa and Siletz. And And also, I'll say that like Corey and Teresa both work at Siletz Valley School. AJ is a PhD student with OSU, and this program is actually her dissertation.
Oh,
So
wow.
she's studying the impacts of providing a program like this for students.
Yeah. And as I understand it, there might be some uncertainty about the programming continuing because they still need financial support, correct?
Yes, so they had a federal grant, and I believe that this grant they have funding through the end of the fiscal year this year, so through June. But this particular grant has been discontinued, and so they are a little uncertain about the future of this program. And I just spoke with AJ, and she made a point that of course, not having funding is a challenge and concerning in itself. But, some of these students have been kind of inconsistency has been a inconsistency has been a consistent factor in their life. And so, like, having a program and resources that remain consistent to them is incredibly important. And so this lack of funding in the near future, it just has a lot of different layers to it of like the impacts it could have on the students. Because this program has had such a positive impact on them. They've seen a measurable increase in graduating seniors continuing on to college as a result of participating in this program. These students get exposed to professionals in different fields and like a wide variety of fields. Of course, there's like STEM fields, like doing like sort of classic Western research, but then they also go and talk to chefs in Portland. And like one of the students that I mentioned in the article, he learned how to make cologne and perfume.
Wow.
And so they just get exposed to so many different potential paths they can continue on in their lives.
Rhianna Bowman, who did this story. Rhianna, thanks so much for coming on and talking about this.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
That's the show for today. All episodes of Oregon on the Record are available as a podcast at klcc.org. Tomorrow on the show, we'll bring you both sides of a debate on how to best manage Oregon forests that's being severely tested by the federal government. I'm Michael Dunn, host of Oregon on the Record. Thanks for listening.